The weakest of all political demands is, give me something to vote for.
I'm occupying Wall Street because if you're not outraged, then you're not paying attention.
Of the economy.
I care deeply about what's happening to the country.
People are losing their homes.
I'm unemployed. I'm homeless.
My retirement literally embezzled.
Corporate banking behemoths robbed the American people.
That ain't right, man.
Stand up and say, this is unacceptable and we're not going to take it anymore.
This country needs an enema. Well, the world needs an enema.
Hi, this is Eve Silber, and you are listening to Occupy Wall Street Radio. I have as a guest with me today someone I've been meaning to interview for a long time, Reverend Michael Ellick. Welcome.
Hey.
You are a minister at Judson Memorial Church, which means you are the advance guard of Occupy Faith. In fact, I think you founded Occupy Faith.
Yeah.
Now here we are about 18 months later.
Is it only 18 months?
It feels like more of a lifetime.
Yeah, really. It feels like I've known you forever, and it must only be that. But, yeah.
We first met doing jail support for the December 17th
That's right.
action.
Yeah.
We ended up being the only two people who found out where they were.
It was like a Easter egg hunt or something.
We were
getting a lot of misinformation. And
you and I were both on bicycles and were able to get to a spot.
And it was really cold.
Really
that was like
cold.
The worst, coldest day of the year, but it was a lot of fun to meet you.
That was when jail support wasn't established yet, and it was just about whoever could find out where people were and to get there.
Yeah.
I ended up being mistaken for a minister that night, which really was an interesting experience to me. I was with you. You were wearing your collar.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you had to go, they kept me in high regard.
Yeah, right. Yeah, maybe I can deputize you. Maybe let me see how that works. I'll find a Bible around here and we can deputize you.
It was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that. What about your role as a minister in a movement like this, which does have a violent response from the people who would like us to be quiet?
No question. Well, it's complicated, of course, and it's complicated on two fronts. On one hand, for very good reason, there are plenty of people in the movement who have suspicion of anyone from organized religion, and that is entirely appropriate. And I think it's sort of the responsibility of people of faith who are trying to carry their values and virtues in any public way. They've got to deal with that legacy of church, especially the Christian church, really becoming an agent of the very same empire it was born in resistance to. So that is understandable. And then the other difficulty on the other side has been the reverse, which is communities of faith, progressive communities of faith in New York City, who have been doing justice work, even economic justice work, for a long, long time, who have doubts about the Occupy movement and judgment from afar, either from what they hear on TV and their kind of background sense of what this is, or from direct contact at times. And so I think it was our hope in the Occupy Faith world to sort of bridge that gap and get two very different cultures and language systems to communicate and hopefully support and aliven each other so that each could become bigger than the sum of the parts. And I'm actually still really hopeful that that's the mission that we're going to do. I don't see this as the 18 months after those good old days. I see us still in a year, one or two, of something that is building and it's a role we're really excited and happy to play.
Yes, something erupted 18 months ago.
Yeah.
But to you, like to me, it felt connected to something that had come before it.
Well, no question. I mean, these things have been done before. Even occupations have been done before. I mean, the American Indian Movement had occupations of Wounded Knee and Alcatraz. Of course, the most famous is the Poor People's Campaign, the occupation of the mall with Resurrection City.
Mm-hmm.
But no question, this was a real escalation in tactics. And, I mean, of course, this spoke for an entire generation of people. This became, I mean, Occupy in a way now is like synonymous with radical. You know, if you want to be a radical social change person, Occupy is sort of where you go. That's what it is. So that's amazing.
Created a destination.
Yeah, it created a destination, a new vocabulary, and that's all wonderful and kind of amazing and a wonderful shot in the arm to me and to others. But yeah, simultaneously, I think that before Occupy, literally, you know, the day before we knew it existed, years before we knew it existed, we've been doing what we're doing for a long time and see ourselves as kind of the inheritors of this anti-empire work of Gandhi, of Martin Luther King, and so many others where faith communities have been at the forefront of progressive social action.
So when this happened, it was a natural response for you to arrive, to go there, to participate, and with you came other people that you had already been entrenched in social justice work with. But it wasn't necessarily all the ministers of New York City ready and waiting to go.
No, not at all. I mean, before all of this happened, I mean, I had friends who were in the early planning days, and I kind of knew it was coming. I wasn't so sure what to expect. I wasn't sure if I believed that it could work. And but these were friends, and I totally bought their politics, and I got what it was. But here I am at this church job. But even before then, I mean, I'd been really involved with immigration justice here in the city and with the New Sanctuary Movement nationally. And a lot of us had already been saying, it's like, we have to really pivot. And if we're going to talk about immigrant rights, you have to talk about economic justice. And that's true for so many issues. And so we were already kind of figuring out and practicing, like, how do we talk about these deep root structures where so many of the issues we deal with are interconnected? How can we leverage our collective power better? So when Occupy comes out and really finds this weird glitch in the matrix where this park will create this international dialogue, we knew, okay, this is it. This is destiny on some level. There's this higher power at work here. And there were plenty of ministers who were really interested in it, but of course there were more who weren't. So, and you know, the other thing is that at that time, Occupy was getting hurt in the press. And there was a lot of talk that these are violent punk kids and they're all white punk kids. And I think our attempt and hope was not only to invite a lot of the faith communities that we'd worked with into the conversation, but also to sort of maybe provide some legitimization in the press by saying, look who else, look at all these communities that are also inspired by this, and that these people in the park are speaking for so many of us in these different social locations. So yeah, we organized a march basically and literally got everyone we knew from every justice movement faith-wise and marched from here down to Zuccotti just to kind of give them something to do.
Right.
And then we created these interfaith services that, again, I don't think that the occupiers necessarily needed to be preached at by, you know, the imams or Buddhist monks or rabbis that we were bringing down, but we knew that connection needed to happen, and it was a way to bring down week after week different faith communities.
It's also, it's you bringing what you do to the movement.
Well, that's true. It's not always what I do, but it is what people do. And I think, you know, it's one thing just to bring the leaders around, but it was another thing to try to get the communities themselves to come down, to issue an invitation. So, you know, when Riverside Church shows up and they've collected all these tents, or you have, you know, Middle Collegiate or Judson bringing food or storing stuff, we wanted to connect populations of people, not just the, you know, the heads of churches or faith-based nonprofits. That was not as interesting to us.
You really created a point of introduction for any folks of faith who wanted to appear and participate in the movement. It gave them easier access. If anything about the movement might have been intimidating
to them. Yeah, that's right. For a while, that's right. We were just the friendly face.
But I think from our perspective, it really did create that link. Because we are very used to seeing the presence of ministers in civil rights movements, et cetera.
Yeah.
And to you, there was that link. I note that to a lot of people experiencing the action of Occupy, it seemed like something very brand new.
Yeah, that's right. And that's a generational disconnect. I mean, that story of why does that seem brand new is everything. And it's wrapped up in the failure of the church, but really also the loss of and the collapse of some big ideologies at the end of the 20th century, where the progressive worldview lost ground. And And there's a big generational disconnect where into the vacuum of all these collapsed ideologies, various forms of fundamentalisms and populist, you know, economic fundamentalists, religious fundamentalists are able to supply people with surrogates for failed ideologies. I mean, everyone's hungry for what's going to be the thing to speak for us, what's going to correctly assess and move people in this new era that we're in. And, you know, in the past, that might have been the church, and that has just not happened. The church that's grown and stayed powerful right now is not necessarily the radical justice speakers. They're still out there in force. And if anything, you know, my hope was by getting us out there, not only in New York, but in all the occupations, getting clergy out there would be sort of a flare shot up to everyone else who felt disconnected,
right,
and said, look, our traditions can still mean something. They don't have to be irrelevant social clubs for those of us to hide away from, you know, what's really going on in society. And, of course, the traditions, if you actually look at them, they do talk about this.
And
they,
you're involved in the Rolling Jubilee, which is a page out of the Bible.
Yeah, I mean, this is something I've been saying for a long, long time, that Jubilee, for all the radicalism of Christianity, supposedly, how radical it's supposed to be, God's love, you know, they don't talk about Jubilee. No one really talks about Jubilee, which is strange in a culture that claims to be so filled with biblical literalists and people who, you know, will go to war based off of a few obscure passages in the Bible. Go to war against homosexual, go to war against women, you know, off of things that are, in my mind, poorly translated and taken out of context in English.
But what is mentioned is a sense of economic justice, and a plan to achieve it is laid out right there in the Bible.
It's very clear in Deuteronomy and Leviticus, yes.
So not only is not Occupy brand new, but its theology of economic justice is something that started a long time ago.
Yeah, it's an ancient idea. It's not the first time. If anything, I mean, Jubilee itself is wrapped up in this idea of how is a community actually supposed to function? What does a community mean? And the Bible says that there is no community. There's no such thing as community unless the nature of that whole is looking out for people, every member inside it. You can't just say, well, poor people are poor because they're too lazy to work and then forget about it. You have to take responsibility for the underlying conditions. And you know, if anything, the Jewish communities that were behind Deuteronomy and Leviticus, they were not unique in the ancient world. Most ancient traditions had some kind of debt forgiveness system.
Because they had already experienced the tendency of debt to make generations of despair.
Oh, yeah. This wasn't new. I mean, I think there's a weird way we look at history where it seems as if those people were brand new. And no, there'd been humans already for a long time.
They'd already made the mistakes that we are making
exactly.
Now.
They had already done it. They were in a very different world. If anything, I think Rome is the first time in the Near East ancient world where you don't have debt forgiveness. All the other cultures have some system of this.
So we're resembling Rome more and more.
Yeah, right.
More.
As if we need another America equals Rome analogy. But it is the point that it's because Rome has no debt forgiveness that it allows wealth to concentrate and create this huge hierarchical structure, right? That's not unlinked to debt. And the entire culture of empire and seen in this way is linked to debt directly.
And empire is a word that people in this movement don't mind using in regard to what's happening right now.
Yeah.
You are listening to Occupy Wall Street Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM, New York. Speaking of empire and speaking of hierarchies, WBAI is the only thing like it on the dial, and it's in trouble. It needs your help. It needs its community to respond. We are having an emergency transmitter fund drive. That's because if at the end of this month we don't have the money we need, this station will lose its place on the dial. And this unique offering and this radical offering will disappear. The number to call to contribute to that fund is 516-620-3602. Call 516-620-3602. You can also visit the website and find lots of ways to donate. www.wbai.org. Michael Ellick, what has WBAI meant to you in terms of this movement and in terms of its place in New York City?
WBAI is the what I wake up to every morning. So I just want to say, primarily, it's the sound of having to get out of bed, and I would be very depressed if that were to change. It's where all my friends and strategists go to talk, and it would be real shame if something happened. So I'll just second it. Got to save WBII. Got to happen. Everyone go out and call the number. Eve's going to repeat it by the end of the show. There's other places where you can get it. But, yeah, invaluable.
516-620-3602. If WBAI goes away, Michael Ellick doesn't get out of bed.
That's exactly right.
Really important that you call and make sure that the station keeps going, because Michael does a lot of good work in the world.
That's
even
great.
Before Occupy came to town,
sure.
Michael was making heroic sacrifices. We want him to get out of bed.
That's
516-620-3602. There are tipping points in this world, and WBAI hit a tipping point, and it learned a lot from that tipping point. Basically, if we can survive this month and get the donations we need, we have a plan and a lot to look forward to, including the acquisition of our own space. We're saying, if you help us now, you are investing in a long future for this station. 516-620-3602. This is the station that lets you know that this movement is not over.
Amen.
Do you think in any way this movement is over, Michael?
No, I don't.
And it's not just because you listen to WBAI.
No, it's not. It's not. I very much don't believe the movement's over. I think anything like this, this is, again, a generational perspective issue. I mean, only in a world that moves this fast, in a media system that moves this fast, can something that had the huge impact and boom of Occupy and the media and in the lives of so many people that 18 months later say it's over. I mean, look at how long it takes the civil rights movement to really ramp up. It exists for a long time before any of the things that we now associate it with it are emerging.
Sure.
And, you know, look what we have now that we didn't have. We have these words and ideas that are connecting in new generations of people. And because of our Judson's visibility with it, I mean, we get people every month coming in from around the country. So what's Occupy doing?
And it's a long answer when somebody asks me that.
Yeah.
So I just want to make it clear to our listeners. I mean, I appreciate so much WBAI has given a home to this movement, because you won't hear it anywhere else or here in the mainstream, all the connections and all the things that are happening because of the action of occupying that park. That action might be over, but what you're saying is that this movement is still in its very early stages, and this movement can be joined to the movements that came before, but is separated in that it has erupted very recently in this format, right?
100%. That's exactly right.
A new generation.
Yeah. And I mean, the movement, not only is it going to, it has to, it will, because whenever you see the kind of inequity that our society demonstrates, people have to have an outlet for it. People have to be able to go somewhere, and this has become the name. This has become the way it's going to happen, and, you know, I can't predict how that will move. I have ideas, but no, I have a lot of faith.
Let's talk about what you're working on right now.
You
talked about, there are so many things. So when someone says to you, what's going on with Occupy? What do you start to talk about?
Well, on the faith community side, I'm working on still what I've been doing from the beginning, which is that there's an interesting phenomenon in our faith communities, whether they're churches, synagogues, mosques, temples, where theology and religion and spirituality somehow become divorced from the real world powers and energies that are run our lives. And to put it the most simply, we don't talk about economics in church. Debt, power, money, politics, these somehow, a few places talk about them. Of course it exists here and there, but somehow these subjects just aren't spiritual. I don't know why. If you read the Bible, how can this be divorced? And we can get into the history of all that, but to my mind, what really needs to happen to get our communities involved in new ways, you need more and more faith leaders being willing to have these conversations about money, debt, and power, and call these out as spiritual issues.
And this action, just in case our listeners aren't aware of the Rolling Jubilee, is an action that is being fronted by the Occupy movement.
That's right.
And what it does is it buys up debt the same way anybody else could, or any other additional creditor could, but then it pays it off. So you want
to...
It cancels the
debt. Yeah, that's right.
So we're talking about medical debt is what they've been able to do buyouts of. And instead of becoming the creditor or the new creditor for that person, they simply write a letter to that person saying, your debt is gone.
Yeah, in fact, a friend of mine wrote a really good song about what that letter might be like. Maybe you can play it on your show at some point.
He's talking about me.
Yeah, Eve wrote the song. It's very good. I just played it this weekend. I was playing it again.
Maybe we'll use it as the play.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's appropriate. But that's
the
right.
The letter reads, "Dear Jane Doe, we write with good news."
Yeah.
And... basically, the Rolling Jubilee is a term taken from the Bible. So in this way, we can see a direct connection between things that are talked about in the Bible and the things that are needing to be addressed right now. As a minister, basically, from someone who has a very atheist upbringing, how I perceive you guys is that you are students and scholars of ancient texts.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's part of what we are.
And ancient times.
Yeah, ancient, that's true. I also have a very real belief and relationship with God in my life.
And that
is informed by that tradition, but not hopefully limited by it. And to me, it's nothing short of a spiritual call. Not only to serve God, what I believe to be God's compassion in my life with others, but to really express what that compassion must look like on a more broad scale, on a more general scale in the public sphere. And that's where we start talking about justice. And so for me, it's not only things like Rolling Jubilee, where we're using this sort of tactic to not only to cancel the debt, but also to create a new conversation. But I'm going to individual churches, going to seminaries, and talking to them about how is it that there can be, you know, maybe two references in the Bible tradition that could be interpreted to be anti-homosexual, and yet at least 15, 16 that are explicitly against usury laws that we ignore. How can we have, you know, these few things that are quoted out of context guide the whole conversation while ignoring a book of the Bible like Deuteronomy, which is basically a social justice manifesto, much less the idea of Jubilee, this radical idea that every 49 years we would reset the financial whole system back to zero. These are not subtle ideas. These are huge ideas that go to the core of the nature of what the faith was.
And since part of your challenge, as you interpret it, was being that diplomat to the faith world to connect them with what you perceive as a movement that needs more and more fuel, as much fuel as it can get, this was a subject for which you saw traction available in these communities.
Well, 100%. I mean...
that these are things that they ought to be encouraged to talk about, because the shame of debt is probably the first challenge.
That's right. That's getting easier and easier, I find, because the debt is influencing so many people's lives, whether it's mortgage debt, student loan debt, even consumer debt. As predatory lending continues to crush people, I think more and more folks are willing to acknowledge we've got to do something about this.
And it also allows you to connect their problems with problems that are happening in the same way on all sorts of different scales for countries.
Oh, 100%.
For regions.
Well, that's right. And one of the real allies we've had in this work of just doing the outreach, of getting these conversations going, is with the old Christian Jubilee movement, which was about global debt forgiveness and debt forgiveness in the global south, where countries become indebted to the U.S. In these ridiculous practices we hold, where they can't pay, the rates have just ballooned, and then we go in and strip mine all their natural resources to pay off our debt.
And these are strategies that you can find records of in other historical texts,
and
in studies of all sorts of people, but in also studies of our current time. And perhaps what we've been missing all along is real focus on this as a tactic.
I think so.
So one of the things I hope that the station survives and the show survives.
Me
and
too.
I get to come talk to you again. We've
yeah.
been wanting to talk for a while.
Yeah.
But the manifestation of the Rolling Jubilee has been really an opportunity to go into communities. And one of the things you guys created was this people's investigation.
That's correct.
So a people's investigation is going in and just a tool and an opening door to go in and say, what is debt? Let's investigate how debt is playing a role in your life and in your community's life.
Well, you've said it really well. If debt, money, if money and debt and power are spiritual issues, which the Bible tells us they are, why are these stories not getting picked up and talked about? Well, shame is one of them. But completely, we wanted to make a safe space inside various communities of trust, like churches or wherever it might be, for people to say aloud what was happening to them. Here at Judson Church, we actually had a number of people bring their stories and share them in the context of our worship service to lift them up metaphorically and say, this is not something you should be ashamed of. I mean, underneath this whole discussion is this theological idea of the prosperity gospel that goes deep into the American ideological DNA. And the idea is really simple, and it plays out in so many ways in our world, which is if you are rich, you're blessed, and if you're poor, you're cursed. Mm. And we wanted to find a counterbalance to that.
And that is a wonderful mission that should advance our community.
Yeah.
I want to thank you, Michael Ehlich, for talking to us and for all the work you do in the movement and for the founding of Occupy Faith. It's been a really important presence in the movement. And I think for me, a big link to the movements that have come before. So very important ingredient. Thank you for being on the show. I want to thank our engineer, Michael G. Haskins, and our technical producer, Reggie Johnson. I want to thank our listeners, and I want to urge you to make the call that I hope you're thinking about making if you haven't made it yet. Call 516-620-3602. Have faith that this station, if given another chance, can survive and prosper and continue to give voice to these issues. My name's Eve Silber. You have been listening to Occupy Wall Street Radio. My guest today was Michael Ehlich, who's a minister at Judson Memorial Church. If you'd like to read his article about the Rolling Jubilee and the role of debt, you can go to occupytheory.org and look at the new edition of Title. Title 4 has an article by Reverend Michael Ehlich on the subject of debt. What's the name of that article?
Resurrecting Jubilee.
There you go. We're rolling, folks. Thank you for listening. Call 516-620-3602. Visit the website wbai.org. Help us keep going. Help us keep rolling. Thank you.
Dear John Doe, set your mind at ease on that. Dear Jane.